This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is At The Turn. It's time for discussion and interviews about the world of golf you won't hear anywhere else. Here are your hosts, Nick Heidelberger and Joe Simons.
Hello, hello. Welcome into a very special edition of At The Turn. Nick and Joe with you. I'm taking a back seat today. It is an all Nick Rules edition of At The Turn. Nick, this is our first recording since our big adventure in the Palouse for the Corner Club Open, and oh boy, we got a lot of rules to talk about based on what we went through.
Well, when I first told Ashley we were going to do an all Nick Rules edition of the podcast, her reaction was, "That sounds lame." Wow, like that stings on so many levels. but okay, so I'm going to do my best to make this not lame. So that is my stated mission ahead of this podcast. This hopefully will not be lame.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be like super nerdy. It's going to be like a half dozen or so things that everybody can relate to. And I think it's very appropriate. And if you stick with us, it's going to be a very interesting, entertaining, and informative episode of At The Turn. Before we get to any of that, a reminder, please rate and review the podcast. What are some rules that you want to know about? Do you have anything for Nikki? You got a rule that the USGA can't sort out? Do you need the West Texas Golf Association to help? If not, Nick can sort this out for you. Please give us 5 stars on Apple. I'm going to say also do it on Spotify. No, Nick doesn't care about big Spotify. I do. Give us 5 stars wherever you listen. Write a nice review. We appreciate your patronage. With that, we're going to go right to the Handicap Report. It's brought to you by Blue Tees, the number one range finder in the game. Boy, Nick and I were dialed in with the Corner Club Open because Nicky pulled out his blue tees, shooting flags, making sure we had the right yardages. Use promo code TURN at checkout for 10% off the best rangefinders in golf. So it was very fun listening back to the episode that we recorded ahead of the Corner Club Open with Dane, predicting what our handicaps were going to be, predicting how we did in the tournament. And Nick, I have to give myself a little pat on the back. I was wrong on my handicap. I'm stuck at an 8.9, but I did say we were going to shoot 69 in the scramble. Unfortunately, I did make a 40-footer on the last hole to shoot 68, so I was off by a little bit. The gallery was too big.
Who could have predicted that?
Who could have predicted that? The gallery was too big on 18. Nick and I won the Corner Club Open. The final body count was six skins in 36 holes. We each won a long drive. Nick won on Saturday. I won on Sunday. Nick got a KP. We won everything.
We won everything there was to win. I mean, that's the highlight. We won everything there was to win. It was pretty cool. Low gross for our division. I will say, not to put Mark on blast, not on blast at all, but
don't.
We begged and pleaded to be in the gold division for 12 straight months. I never actually looked at the spreadsheet at the end because it didn't matter. We had too many envelopes in front of us. But I think you said that we finished third gross for the entire tournament. Now, we were in the second division, but did we finish third? No. Okay, that's not.
We finished.
That's
I'm
a fantasy
almost,
I've been living in for
well,
the last
I'm
10
almost
days.
Positive we had the third lowest scramble score of the entire field on Sunday. So Saturday was a shit show. It was really, really fun, but the wind sustained was 30 to 40 miles an hour. That's not an exaggeration. It was probably the toughest conditions I've ever played in.
There was rain. 205 yard par three into the wind. Not a single person hit the green in the entire tournament field.
I hit driver on that hole and was pin high. Like, I took a little bit off it, but it was still like a 260 shot normally without the wind that landed pin high. It was quite an experience. There was hail so hard for roughly 2 minutes that everyone just hid underneath trees. And then Nick had to putt through, I don't know, the North Pole to make a 4-footer for par. And he did. Truly a great experience. The day before on Friday, we played at Palouse Ridge, which is the championship golf course in Pullman. It was a little bit windy out there. I had a hole in one lip out, which was pretty fun.
I almost forgot about that.
I know. I thought about that doing dishes a couple of days ago, and I was like, I almost made an ace. So it was pretty dramatic. I frankly mishit a sand wedge, and it landed about 40 feet short of the pin, but hit a downslope. And we thought it came to a stop. We watched it forever and was like, oh, that's pretty close. And I just kind of kept watching it and kept watching it. And from our perspective, it looked like the ball had stopped moving. And then all of a sudden, it takes a sharp right-hand turn because it hit the lip of the hole. And yes, it would have been fun to make a hole-in-one, but I've said long in this podcast, and I'm standing by it, to make a hole-in-one like that on a mishit, especially when you don't have one in your life, would not feel great. I would not have been super excited about it, especially because Martinik and Romy and Voorhees would give me shit about not making a real hole-in-one and all this kind of stuff. And I would know, look, I would know in the back of my head, Nick, that it's not a real hole-in-one. So I know you disagree with that perspective.
I couldn't disagree more. Like a hole, there's no such thing as like a perfect golf shot paying off, right? Like a hole-in-one is not meant to be, it's not meant to be perfect. It is the combination of some luck, some skill, some strategy. Like it's random. It's Plinko, right? It doesn't have to be perfect. It's just cool. So like, it's not like you're going to hit a good golf shot and it's going to go in the hole. Like that's not how it works.
I understand what you're saying. But God, what a weekend. My handicap stayed the same. I haven't played golf. The only time I've touched my golf clubs is to get them out of the way. Since that tournament, it's been, I don't know, 10-ish days. I'm going to play golf on Wednesday, tomorrow, when you're listening to this, with some friends. But boy, I just had no interest in playing golf. And our buddy Romy played like the next day after the Corner Club Open. I just couldn't imagine doing that. Have you played since then? We're trying to get Nick out of here. We're recording this on Monday morning. It's like 10:30 right now. Nick's got a tee time that he's got to get to because he's got all these new clubs that he's been sent that he has to shoot a course record with. But have you played at all since the tournament?
I have not played at all. Actually, yeah. I didn't touch a club for a week. The last couple nights after the kids went to bed, I started hitting in my garage a little bit.
Garage time, yeah.
You know, just five shots a club going down the bag just to stay loose. But yeah, I'm going to get to the golf course. I've got reviews of so many different clubs coming up that I've just been like collecting, and now I need to actually put some action into them, and it'll be good to get back to the course. So yeah, anyways, that's all a long way of saying my handicap is 18.8. I actually predicted it would go down to 18.9, and I went up myself like that 40 footer for par on 18, or for birdie, I should say. You know, I couldn't predict quite how low my handicap was going to go, but 18.8, it's a season best for me. I've now melted, coming up on 6 strokes off my index this year. So let's go.
I love that. So before we wrap up the Corner Club Open from our perspective, the actual tournament and how we did, what was your favorite individual moment of the entire weekend that you accomplished?
It was adding up my score on Saturday, because I truly had no idea where I stood. And we finished the last hole, and I'm like, I could have shot 93. I could have shot, you know, 80 something. I really don't know, because I had an eagle, a birdie, and I had a bunch of sevens and eights.
Yeah,
on the car.
You did have an eagle.
And so we're driving back, and you had no idea. I had no idea. And I added up to 88. The first time I broke 90 this year. And that was probably the best feeling. I actually shot 2 million the day before at Palouse Ridge. So it was nice to get back into the double digits. So that was probably the best. And then just the other thing, not an individual, but more of a team thing, is we won every skin on Sunday during the scramble. And that's kind of a flex that shouldn't go unrecognized. Like out of our whole division, we took every skin, which was pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was a pretty good feeling. My favorite moment individually, and then we can get on to the extended Nick rules, was the long drive hole. I don't know what was going on, but I was hitting my driver like really good for me. And I usually hit my driver pretty good. And I stand up there on 7, and the ball flight is perfect. It's on the perfect line, and it hadn't even reached its apex. And I said, that's the winner for the long drive. And sure enough, it turned out to be the winner. I felt pretty good about that swing.
Fair prediction. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how we play. I mean, look, we're going to play in this tournament again, but my God, I don't know how we do. Like, it's not going to get better than this. The only thing we can do is ascend to the gold flight and try to do the same thing, but in with the best players as our opponents, I guess.
Yeah, that's all there is left to do.
An apology to Mark. We tried. We didn't try. We did have a nice conversation immediately following the Corner Club Open outside in the Corner Club. I thought that I was recording that conversation, and I was, but unfortunately, it was on my phone, and I caught 3 minutes of it, and it was something like a 33-minute conversation. So I apologize to Mark, who runs the tournament. We're going to have him back on for our British Open preview in a couple of weeks. So avid listener of the program, big supporter of us. We're a big supporter of him, and we're going to make good here in a few weeks. And with that, it is now time for the longest edition ever of Nick Rules, brought to you by Matchstick Golf. Use promo code TURN20 at checkout. And if you're in the Portland area, the shop opens tonight, June 25th. This is the opening. The social media posts look incredible. I'm going to be there. Dane's going to be there. The Assemble Massives will be there in North Portland. It's going to be a great time, Nick.
Sad I'm going to miss that, but nobody is missing out on Nick Rules. Now, I will have to say, a lot of these questions came up during our weekend.
That's right.
Not all of our rounds of golf, as you established, were tournament rounds, so I don't want any listeners to feel like there was any rules violations or anything funky happening during the tournament. These are just questions that came about while we were playing golf over the weekend, and I'm going to start with the juiciest headline of them all. Backstopping, Joe.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
If you don't know what backstopping is, you've been living under a rock, but I will explain it. It is when you intentionally leave your ball in a position for an opponent to just potentially serve as a backstop. If they're going to run their shot past, your ball is there to stop it, and you both get to mark where it hit. So there was some debate as to whether backstopping is legal, as to whether it's legal among playing teammates in team events, or when it is or when it isn't legal. And I'm here to clear up all that noise. USGA rule 15.3A. If two or more players agree to leave a ball in place to help any player, and that player then makes a stroke with the helping ball left in place, each player who made the agreement gets the general penalty, 2 penalty strokes.
So it's the agreement that is the issue. It's if there's a verbal contract made, then the general penalty occurs. If you play it right, if you keep your mouth shut, then it's okay. I see you kind of going, not really.
Well, yeah, because I don't think the agreement has to be verbal. I think if what you're saying is if you intentionally but unintentionally do it, then it's okay. But that's kind of the rule, is like, if there's any intent, then it's, you know, like you a nod or whatever it is. Yeah, technically, it's the agreement that, you know, is the violation. If you're just oblivious, and you're just like raking your bunker and your ball's there and somebody else is playing, that's not a violation. But if you're looking at them and someone's motioning towards the ball and you kind of nod them off, or, you know, that's, it's all the same. Like, follow the spirit of the rule. Don't, you know, don't cheat.
Well, yes. Don't cheat is the through line of this episode today. But I guess what I'm getting at is there is a way to accomplish backstopping if you just play it cool, if you have like a high court awareness, right? So let's say you're in the bunker and you hit your bunker shot to a foot and your buddy is putting and the ball would be sort of behind the hole to serve as a backstop in this case. Just rake the bunker slowly. Don't do anything. Like it's not like you and your buddy have to have extreme or demonstrative body language or say something in order to make this work out to your advantage. You just need to play it cool and you can take advantage of a rule here.
Kind of. I don't know. I guess I disagree with that. I think I guess by the rule, it is the agreement that makes the penalty, but I kind of see it as more the intent. Like if you're intentionally playing dumb, then you're just kind of you're just kind of like just faking like you're not cheating. I mean, I guess the rule is the agreement, but it's kind of like when players are taking all these practice swings in the rough with a 3-wood just to kind of like clean their lie, and they're like, oh, I was just, they're acting dumb. That's kind of what this sounds like to me, is like if you're just being slow and if you're intentionally acting like you don't know what's going on, because it just still sounds like Just mark your ball. If anybody was good enough to hit your damn ball behind the hole, they would just putt it into the cup.
I think that's right. Do you want to give context for why we're talking about this?
Yeah, I mean, there was a question during one of our rounds of golf where we were playing a match against two of our buddies, and there was a bunker shot. Someone was about to hit a bunker shot. Somebody had a putt, and there was a ball right behind, you know, the shot, and they said, no, don't mark that. Leave it there. It could help me. And this was about 15 minutes after somebody tried to call me out for a rules violation. So I immediately said, no, that's cheating. That's backstopping. You got to move it. I made him move it. The shot rolled over the mark. Sure enough. But you know what? It didn't impact the score. That was an up and down either way. And look, that player who will remain nameless probably feels much better that they made that par, got up and down from the bunker without needing the help of an illegal backstop.
Couple things. That player doesn't care. I can tell you that much. The other thing is, this came at what, like hole two or three of 54 holes that we were going to play over the course of the weekend. When I tell you, I couldn't have given less of a shit about the backstopping, and you, it was just so funny that you guys were at each other. And what was even funnier about it is we were playing as a fivesome, which we'll get to momentarily, because it's like, guys, we're already breaking all the rules. We just need to keep going. We got a lot of golf this weekend. Let's go. If this impacts the match, we'll talk about it for 6 hours over beers. But I knew it wasn't going to. We just had to move it along. How much with you calling this into question was the fact that you were called out relatively recently for a potential rules violation?
Yeah, I mean, it's 100%. There's no chance I'm saying anything, or really. I mean, I'm probably thinking in my head like, oh, that's backstop. I'm pretty sure that's illegal. I wasn't even 100% at the time, but I was like 95%. But if he didn't just call me out, there's no way I'm saying anything. But I'm, you know, I had to flex a little bit when he's trying to question my rules knowledge and then trying to pull backstop. And on the next hole, that's not going to fly with Nicky rules.
Well, let's get to the next one.
So the next one is standing in line of a putt. So basically standing behind somebody else's putt. Which is what I was called out for. Me and this player had a putt on the exact same line. And mine was a couple inches off. So he was further out. I stood behind him and then took a step to my right. You know, so I was not right back on his line, but I was close enough to get a read. And he tried to call me out that it's illegal to stand on that line. Two things came to my mind. It is illegal to stand right behind a player's line. It's not illegal to A, stand on your line, which is what I was doing, or to stand near their line, like basically stand back and take a step off. Now, the rule that I scoured the USGA rule book, what I found is specific to foursomes or to four ball and what playing partners can and can't do. But it seems like if it applies to your playing partner, should apply to your opponents. And that is, a player must not stand on or close to an extension of the line of play behind the ball while their partner is making a stroke to gain information for the side's next stroke. So basically, like, if you're going to hit, if you have the same putt, like if it's a scramble or whatever, when you're going to hit the exact same putt, you shouldn't be standing on that exact same line.
I think that's right. I mean, again, this is one where it's very easy to just stand 6 inches to a foot.
Just take a step. Like, I just, you know,
just take 1 step,
2 feet. Yeah.
Like, you can tell, like, if a putt breaks a lot and you want to see how much it breaks, you can stand like almost perpendicular to that putt and gain a lot of information. Just watch the putt. Don't be a weirdo and like do the Camilo Villegas behind them looking at the putt. Just be cool. Again, I think with a lot of these, if you just play it cool, you're going to be within the confines of the rule.
Yeah, and I think also, and I'm kind of bummed I couldn't find this because I thought I knew this rule really well and I just couldn't find it in the rule book. I think you're also allowed, once the putt is hit, to run in on any line you want. So like if you stand, they take two paces off to the side, they hit the putt. As soon as they hit it, I think you can walk over to the line. But again, I couldn't find that specific wording. What I did find is specific to teammates. But yeah, like you said, just don't stand right behind someone when they putt. You'll probably be fine.
Well, I thought of a famous example of that, as you were saying, at the 2004 Masters, Phil Mickelson had, I think, like a 20-footer that broke quite a bit to win his first major. Chris DeMarco, his playing partner, hit a bunker shot that was like 2 feet behind where Phil was going to putt. DeMarco hits the putt. Phil runs in once the ball is in motion to see exactly what it does as the putt finished. So suffice it to say, Phil wasn't breaking a rule in the 72nd hole of the Masters with a chance to win. He was taking advantage of the rule and he understood it quite well.
Right. We're going to stay pretty close to lines of putts.
Oh boy. This is the big one. So if I can back up before you explain this. Mm-hmm. So in this tournament, you play with your buddies day one, you get the pairing you want, and then day two, you're repaired according to scores. So we play with a father and son on Father's Day, which was a lot of fun. Young kid, like 20 years old, hit it straight as an arrow, hell of a putter, really nice guy. His dad works construction, probably what, mid-50s, something like that. Nice guy. As the day went on, they got less and less nice, I would say. There was just little jabs here and there. Like I hit one
gamesmanship, yeah.
Well, a little gamesmanship. I hit one into the shit, and he said, like, you're not going to find that one. And it's like stuff like that. And it's like, all right, man. The most egregious was after we totaled up the scores, they had us for a 69 instead of a 68. I drove the par 4-10th on my tee shot, and we two putt for birdie. They disputed the fact that I drove a green. And it's like, guys, A, this is a big lie to try to pull off. B, you just spent 5 hours with me out there. Do I seem like the kind of guy who would be trying to do this? And C, pay attention to what's going on. This is on you. I drove the green.
They were talking to the ranger about how your drive on 7, which one long drive, was 150 yards past their drive. Like, they don't think you can drive like a 294-yard par 4 that's downhill?
Yeah, it was pretty egregious. So anyway, that's some context for what Nick is about to explain.
Yeah, so, okay. I don't even know where
you hated this so much. I know.
So they were, I'll just give the full context. They were not on every green, but on all the important putts. They would, first person would stand on the ball at address, and the partner would stand behind them, you know, reading the green, squatting down, you know, 6 feet, 10 feet behind, more to the left, too much back to the right. That's good. Okay, go. And they would putt. And at first, it was like the first time I noticed was like the second or third or fourth hole. So it was like, okay, they're only like, maybe they're just, they really, really want to make this putt. And they didn't make it. It was like, oh, it was a longer one. So I didn't really care that much, but I was like, man, it's kind of ballsy to like be blatantly trying to pull that off, like in a golf tournament. Like we should know that's pretty illegal. And they kept doing it a little bit more. And I was a little bit aggravated. And I like these guys, but they were clearly trying to win. Like that was the vibe. Like, I was so happy to be playing with a father and son on Father's Day. It told them it's one of my dreams to play with my son or my daughter in this tournament. But they were just a little bit taking it a little bit too seriously. And then what really kind of put me over the edge is they started making these putts.
They made some.
They made like three like outside of 30 footers that never would have gone in if it weren't for this. And I know you didn't care, or you at least said you didn't care. I was kind of surprised. If you truly did not care, I'm a little bit surprised by that.
I truly did not care because I knew we were going to beat these guys.
I knew we were going to beat them too, but it was pretty egregious. And that last one they made got them within one stroke with two holes left. And we weren't necessarily playing our best, although our best was yet to come. So here is the rule. Once the player begins, okay, so I should establish that in a team event like this, your playing partner has all the privileges that a caddy would have. And if you and your playing partner also have caddies, your playing partner's caddy and your playing partner and your caddy, they all have the same privileges when it comes to what they can and cannot do to your ball, to help you out, all that stuff. Okay, lining up your partner's putt. Once the player begins taking a stance for the stroke, and until the stroke is made, the player's caddy must not deliberately stand on or close to an extension of the line of play behind the ball for any reason. Although a player may get advice from a caddy on the shot to be played, the line of play, or other similar matters, the ability to line up one's feet and body accurately to a target line is a fundamental skill of the game for which the player alone should be responsible. Allowing a caddy to stand behind a player taking a stance so as to direct the player how to line up undermines the player's need to use his or her own alignment skills and judgment. We believe that an appropriate line is drawn between allowing advice from a caddy and prohibiting the caddy from being involved in directing the player in the act of taking a stance to play the ball. It's almost as if the USGA watched our round of golf and then wrote this rule.
I understand why it aggravated you, because it's clearly illegal. It clearly gives them an advantage.
The advantage clearly played out. Like, I was a little bit perplexed and annoyed. Not even annoyed, but it's just like, huh, that's kind of egregious that they're doing that. Like, kind of odd. I would never be doing that in a golf tournament. It wasn't until they started making these bombs that I was really bothered by it.
Let's give young Ben credit, because Pop wasn't making the putts. Ben was pouring them in.
Yeah, and he's a good player. Like, I just don't feel like – I don't think they would have made these putts. You know, maybe one out of the three. Like, I think I'd say they made three 30-footers for birdie that maybe they would have made one of them. But they were good enough that they didn't need to be doing that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say this to a couple things. The toothpaste was out of the tube, and we didn't say anything immediately.
Yeah,
so,
you got to say something the first time or not at all. We could have played 54 with them that day, and after like the front nine,
that's right.
I was never going to say anything.
Yeah, and I think the issue comes with, in my mind, and I truly, it did not bother me. It still doesn't bother me, but if I would have let it bother me, or if it was bugging me, I think it would have affected what we were doing, right? Because then I'm getting upset. I'm getting annoyed that they're getting birdies that I can justify that shouldn't be legitimate. That sort of top track in my head. Where if we just concentrate on our game, we're going to beat them, which is what ended up happening. And I understand you being annoyed. They were breaking a rule, but we had to say something right away. We couldn't have said something on the sixth time they've done it.
Right. I actually would kind of beg to differ in the fact that we couldn't say anything. It was too late to say anything. They made that third long one, I think on 16. And I knew I wasn't going to say anything. And I just stepped up and hit good golf shots from there on in. It saved the last part of the day, but I got a KP on 17, made the putt, put us in the middle of the fairway on 18, put us in the middle of the green on 18, then you made the putt. But I just felt like, okay, this is bothering me. There's nothing I can do about it now except for play better. And I think it kind of just helped me hit some good golf shots on some really tough holes when we needed it.
Yeah, it clearly helped. We did birdie 17 and 18, which are very difficult holes. So that helped. At the end of the day, just don't do this. And in my mind, like, if you tried to do this with me, like if you tried to line up my putt from behind, I would say, go away. I'm trying to hit this putt right now. Like, there's no, like, okay, we did go through the process of like both reading the putt and saying like, hey, can you hit it to the spot? Let's hit it to the spot. It's a good read, bad read, whatever, whatever. But like, you were like 2 feet behind me and saying like, to the right, to the left. Yeah, that's right. Okay, great. I would freak out like that. That's, I mean, would you like that if I was doing that to you? Do you think that would help? It'd be terrible, right?
Just to like, you probably contributed three strokes. You're probably the reason I broke 90 Saturday and we won this tournament on Sunday, because you gave me really good reads that were not the reads that I had. Like, you, I'd say I'm seeing a foot right. You're like, ah, I think it's maybe a cup or a ball, or, you know, and I would take your reads and I made a lot more putts than I normally do. And that's all you need to do. Give me the read. Like, like the rule says, like, you can get advice to help, and that absolutely helped. But to like tell me if I'm lined up properly, like, that's on me.
It was bad. I did like, I had some drinks with Dan at the club afterwards. It was fine. And he didn't apologize for this, but he apologized for the thing on 10. And he's like, after I thought about it, it made sense. And it was fine.
They were fine. I like them overall. Yeah, like, I'd like to play golf with them again. I like them. Good people.
Totally
just
agree.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally agree.
Just smashed a drive on a hole that was, we thought was lost, and they ended up finding it, and we ended up converting a birdie. And two holes later, they're like, that's the luckiest break anyone's going to get in this tournament.
Like, I mean,
they're really trying to pull out all the stops. Like, they're running out of holes to get ahead of us. And they're really, and that's when I was like, all right, it's just a little more self-awareness on like how seriously we should take this golf tournament.
Agreed. It did help us lock in a little bit. Again, we won. All right, Nick, you got a couple of you got a couple more rules in here for us.
I got some casual ones here just to kind of throw out. These ones don't have anything to do with the USGA rule book. Fivesomes. You mentioned we played in a fivesome. We had a bunch of people we were looking forward to seeing and playing golf with over this weekend, and we texted all of them in a big group and said, hey, let's all play Palouse Ridge on Friday before the tournament. Five people RSVP'd yes, which puts you in a weird spot because you're like, well, we don't want to come all this way and then play in a twosome and a threesome, you know, but we also want to respect the course and everything. So I called Janelle over at Palouse Ridge and she said, hey, I'm working that day. If you guys aren't idiots, you can play in a fivesome. I told her we play shorter tees, play quick, have some self-awareness. And we did. I think we played that round in like 4.5 hours. It was as long as we would have wanted it to take, but it wasn't egregiously long. And we didn't really disrupt. I don't think we really disrupted their tee sheet or anything. So again, if you want to play in fivesomes, I think the best tip of the day, I think was your idea, was just play a set of tees that's a little more forward than you would normally play. Don't spend as much time, like Romy said, don't spend as much time looking for balls. Like if you don't see it, just take your penalty and move on.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, number two was a cluster, but besides that, I think we played pretty quick, pretty well. The freedom of giving up on a lost golf ball, it'll set you free. If there's tall grass or like you're in the trees, give up quicker. You know what? 3 minutes is lame. 1 minute max. Just give up. It's totally fine. I think if you have a mindset of giving up looking for your golf ball and dropping, it allows you to move on to the next shot and focus on how to salvage a bogey or a double as best you can, rather than bemoaning the fact that you can't find your ball and you hit a good shot and you're trudging around in the grass. I've taken that mindset the last couple of years, and it really, really helps me. One, it picks up pace of play. And two, I think playing partners appreciate being called off quickly. Trust me, I've been out there plenty of times going through the motions, being like, we're not going to find this fucker.
Yeah.
We're not going to find anything out here. And just like, guys, it's fine. I'm just going to drop it. Take stroke. It's all good. Just
right.
Drop it.
Look in two places for your ball. Look where you think it went. Look where you want it to be. If it's not in either of those places,
that's right.
You're not going to do yourself any favors by finding it anyways.
That's right. Next hole, absolutely fine. I was pleasantly surprised how quickly we played as a fivesome. But I think after the first couple of holes, we kind of got our stuff together and figured out a pace of play that was suitable to all of us. And I don't think anyone really particularly played very well. Like I probably played the best, and I think I shot like 83. So I didn't play that great. So I think we still had a good day because the pace of play was good, except for Romy putting. He wanted to break his putter in half. But otherwise, we had a really
almost
good day.
Yeah, that,
I know. Romy, I love you. I'm so happy that you didn't break your putter because you're the best golfer of us all. You just had a bad day putting. It was absolutely fine. How many more do we got?
Just one more. One more. Scramble strategy. And this kind of came to my attention kind of watching it play out and kind of thinking back to ways we've done it, kind of reading some stuff that about scrambles. I think a kind of traditional scramble strategy is, all right, get one in the fairway and then let loose, right?
Let it rip.
Right? That's kind of, am I wrong that that's how a lot of people kind of approach it?
That's the prevailing thought. Get one in play and then the big gorilla is going to swing hard.
I'm here to flip that around. Because I think of it in first serve, second serve terms, right? So if you put your layup guy out first, let's call that a second serve, right? He's going to hit 14 second serves. You get 20, let's call it 14, you know, driver holes. So you get 28 tee shots if it's a two-person scramble. You get 14 second serves. Let's say three of those are not in play. So now you've got your A player, your first serve guy, hitting 3 second serve. So you've got 17 out of 28 tee shots are safe, conservative, you know, second serves. And that only leaves 11 kind of aggressive, big gorilla. I like that way of putting it. Let's play that backwards. All right, let's say your first serve player goes first. All right, that's 14 right off the bat. Let's say five of those are trash. That means that your second serve guy is hitting five layups, but nine just full swings. That means you get 23 out of 28 tee shots that are aggressive, you know, bombs, first serve, whatever you want to call it. The 23 versus 17, I think that makes a big difference. And I don't think there's a reason to lay up without a single ball in play.
Yeah, it's so funny because we didn't articulate this to each other, but I meant to say this a lot to you prior to the scramble round. It's like, I think we play way too conservative usually in this tournament and trying to just guide one out there and then rip one. The only time where we played overly conservative was on 16, where it's kind of a narrow fairway. You hit one good, and I saw a sand splash up from a fairway bunker, and Dan, our playing competitor, insisted that it went down the hill into the hazard. You were having trouble following the ball all day, so like you thought it was in the hazard too. I dialed down from a driver to a 3-iron. I'm standing over it saying, there's no way I'm going to hit this good in my head, and I just snap hook it, like, I don't know, 125 yards, and we got up and down from the fairway bunker for a par, so it wasn't a big deal, but that was the one time where I thought we were overly conservative. We were able to get away with it, but generally speaking, the format of a scramble is to just make a bunch of birdies and just hit it as far as you can the whole time. And I think if you don't do that, you're doing a disservice to yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I disagree on that 16th hole, but overall, take it or leave it.
In what way?
I think all you need to do is just get one in play. And I didn't really feel like I wasn't confident I was in play. And like a 3-iron, just hit one in play. The last thing we need you to do is blast a driver. Like there's shit left and there's shit right. So like just. You could have hit a 6-iron. It didn't matter. Like we're gonna have a short iron in. That's all I wanted.
At that point, I was hitting my driver straighter than I was my pitching wedge. So it just that's what killed me. Anyway, no regrets. We want everything, Nick. We can't have any regrets. It's absolutely fine. And that is Nick Rules. Again, if you are in the Portland area, just go to St. John's. Go to Matchstick Golf HQ. You're gonna have yourself a terrific day. Nick, it's time for the Mad Golfer of the Week. It's brought to you by Piper Golf. Use promo code, you're already laughing, promo code TURN10 at checkout for 10% off incredible golf balls. We're going to your old stomping grounds, kind of. Newport Country Club in Newport, Rhode Island. How many times have you played Newport Country Club?
I'm trying to remember. It's either zero or none.
one of those?
Yeah.
Newport, one of the most beautiful places in the United States of America. Just an absolutely gorgeous town. It's the site of this week's U.S. Senior Open. Nikki, who's your U.S. Senior Open pick?
Phil's got to be in it, right?
Phil is banned from the USGA, I think, at this point. Is Phil playing in the U.S. Senior Open?
I have no idea. You really put me on the spot there. I've got an anecdote about Newport Country Club. I'm trying to decide if I should spill it now or let you do this Mad Golfer of the Week first.
Well, the Mad Golfer is quick, so let me get to it, and then okay. I'm excited for your anecdote. Our Mad Golfer of the Week is Rick Akers. Quote, "Here I am, trying to play the oldest courses in each state, and Jeff could not find a way to get me on the course. Disappointed to say the least." Come on, Jeff. Rick is just trying to play the oldest course in every state. Why can't you accommodate?
That's one of the douchiest like bucket lists to possibly have. Like you're only trying to do this so you can go to a party and be like, well, I've played the oldest golf course in each state. Like I do not want to have a conversation with that person. Like that sounds so entitled.
Well, hey, look,
you want to play Newport Country Club? Here's how you play it. There are all sorts of like auctions and fundraisers where you can spend like $3,000 or $5,000 to get around out there. They're not just going to let you do it just because you want to play the oldest course in each state. So pony up or shut up, because nobody really cares about your ridiculous bucket list. You are way too entitled, Rick.
Additionally, the oldest course in every state is probably going to be pretty exclusive, I would imagine, in most cases, especially in the Northeast. Like, you're doing it to have an alibi for not belonging to rich, exclusive clubs and then trying to play on them. Rick, do better. We see your grift coming a mile away, and you know who else did? Jeff. Okay?
Jeff saw it.
Jeff knew.
Now, I will say, I used to work in the golf in New England at the New England PGA, hosted golf tournaments all around the region. We were standing on a tee one day. I don't remember all the context, but a buddy of mine was talking to somebody else. Said, oh man, I got to tell you, one of the most underrated bathrooms in all of New England. Before you could even finish the sentence, someone goes, oh, the bathroom at Newport Country Club, it's overlooking the second hole. And it's like, so for somehow, some way, there's a urinal in Newport Country Club that has one of the best views, or for some reason or another is by and large the best bathroom in New England that nobody knows about, but now everybody knows.
I mean, I kind of love this. Like, hey, do you guys know a great place to take a dump in Rhode Island?
Well, I think it's a year. I think it's a view from a urinal.
I see. So you're taking a pee and you're just seeing God's beautiful creation out there.
That's my interpretation. I've never experienced this, so I could be wrong, but yeah, that's my takeaway.
Before we wrap up, can we do 30 seconds on Lexi? Are you aware of the past month she's had?
I'm not aware of the last 2 weeks she's had, but I am aware that she announced her retirement.
Yeah, so the last 2 weeks is frankly the interesting part. So she announces her retirement at the U.S. Senior Open. She's going to retire at the end of the season. Last week, she lost in a playoff. She almost won a golf tournament. This week, she finished top 10 at the PGA Championship. So she almost won, lost in a playoff, and she finished top 10 and was frankly in pretty serious contention the first couple of rounds and kind of backed up over the weekend. But how crazy would it be if Lexi just rips off an incredible season and then it's like, do I want to retire? Interesting thing to watch as the season unfolds.
I'd love to see her add a major to the resume. I think there are two left, the British and the Evian.
I think that's right.
I don't think she even plays in the Evian. She hasn't played it in like quite a while. She
hates that golf course. Yeah.
So she's got one major left.
She's British. Let's go. Let's go, Lexi.
Could make things a little more interesting, yeah.
Scotty wins again. He gets his sixth tournament win of the year. I'm going to pat myself on the back. Not going to hurt myself doing it. We got Bryson winning the U.S. Open. So, Nick, we're having our best major season to date. We got 2 out of 3. I can't remember who you picked to win the Masters, but you were right, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, perfect. So we got the Masters. We got the U.S. Open. We got the British Open coming up, which I'll be in attendance of. We're going to have some updates on the old Scotland trip coming up pretty soon. Exciting developments there. We're going to get Mark on. We're probably going to need to record like 2 or 3 in advance of that trip, Nick. So I'll probably be texting you way too much about the next 5 weeks of this podcast. But
I was going to drag out Nick Rules for like the rest of the year with all these things we had from the tournament, but you wanted to hammer them all out in one fell swoop.
I know. I'm making life difficult on you. Thank you for your good work in this episode. Good luck over at U of I with all those new sticks and putters and everything you got out there.
Thanks.
I'm Lacey Evans. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time at The Turn. Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.